welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Arthur M. Mills, Jr., and actually he is stationed in the military in Korea. He is also the author of the award-winning book, The Empty Lot Next Door. It's a story of his childhood being haunted by a ghost named Candleface and his brother's untimely suicide. Although depicted as fiction, Art's story contains about 80% true events. So please continue to listen because we will not only discuss the book, but we'll also delve a little bit into the bullying that is going on today. And this is something that he as a child experienced and definitely was probably the cause of his brother's untimely suicide. But before we go on, a little bit about Art. Arthur M. Mills, Jr. was born and raised in Austin, Texas. One of Arthur's numerous dreams was to become a writer. It took him 37 years, but he fulfilled that dream by writing the novel, The Empty Lot Next Door, and this is, of course, what we're going to be discussing today. The novel is based, as I said, on true events of his childhood. Art joined the Army shortly after high school and has been serving honorably ever since. Art and his wife, Yosan, have two children, Arthur and Alan. Hi, Art.
Hello.
Wow, gosh, congratulations. Award-winning book.
Oh, stop it. You're making me blush.
Well, I'm sure that our listening audience can really appreciate your blushing, but congratulations. Congratulations. That's,
thank you.
Gosh, Kids Award for the Best Teen Young Adult, first place, and also for the South Regional First Place and for Parenting, Family, and Relationships, an honorable mention, and that was in the adult category. You know, that's a lot of wins.
Yeah, that is. I can't believe I was able to do that myself.
Well, obviously, you have a very good book, and I can attest to it because I actually, as you know, did read it myself and
had some
interesting experiences with it, so which we can get into a little later. But before we go any further, Art, just explain to our listening audience what your book, The Empty Lot Next Door, is about.
Well, it was a way for me to try to figure out what really happened in the past. It is important to know that it wasn't really meant to be a book. It was just a bunch of notes. You know, for many, many years, I told the story to my Army buddies and to family and friends about how I was tortured by a little girl ghost. And people always ask me if it was real, and I always said yes. But I eventually just sat down and started to research what was going on and to see if it was really true. And I came up to the realization that it was true. And the way I did that is I had a friend of mine do some research about the empty lot that was next to my childhood home. And growing up, you know, that little empty lot was the neighborhood playground. And it wasn't until later on when I found out that a house burned down and the rumors were a whole family of four was killed there. And the neighborhood kids said that they couldn't afford a cemetery plot, so they just threw the bodies in a hole in the back of the empty lot. And being real young, you know, 6 to 8 years old, I, for the most part, believed it. And growing up, I would have these dreams of this little girl coming after me, and because I jumped in that hole, and the rumors were if you were to jump into that hole, ghosts would come out and haunt you. And I tried it, and I jumped into that hole, and after that, I started having little dreams of this girl coming after me. She would sit on my chest and poke at my chest or hold my nose and mouth shut. And but for many years, I wondered if it really happened. And just about 3 years ago when I started researching it, I came to the realization that there was really a house there and there was a death there. And I just started putting together that it was absolutely true, that there's no other explanation for my dreams, that it actually had to have actually happened.
So the Candleface is the ghost that came out of this hole and was haunting you. And so just explain to our listening audience a little bit about Candleface.
Candleface is the girl that that was believed to have died in the fire. The fire burned down the house a few years before we even moved there, and the rumors were if you jump into the hole that the ghost will come out. But when I jumped into the hole, I didn't see anything. But it was about 5-6 hours later in the middle of the night when I woke up, I did see this female-looking creature crawling out of the hole. And for the next 7 to 8 years, but really in the book, I condensed it to a summer to make the book run smoother. For the next several years, she would haunt me. And I could never actually see her face clearly. But to me, it just looked like a melted candle.
Mm-hmm.
Just looked like it was just melted down. And being a young kid, that's just what I associated with it.
So you published this book, last year, I guess, that you are going to be making some revisions and actually coming out with a second edition. So let's talk about the changes that you made to the book for this second edition. And tell our listening audience what you did and why you were doing that.
I would, if I had to give a percentage, I would say 80% of the book is true, and 20% is just made up to make the book flow. When I was writing the book, I did talk to friends and family and ask them what was their perception of what really happened. Because it wasn't just me; it was several suicides in the neighborhood. And it really affected everybody, not just me. So I asked a lot of people for their insight, and I included it in the book as much as possible. I wanted it to be as real as possible. The changes, though, that I'm making now is some feedback from my friends and family that actually lived through the ordeal along with me. There were some places where my friend said, well, this is not quite accurate. This didn't really happen the way that you wrote. And so I went ahead and changed a few of those things. Probably the biggest change I made was through the character Griffin. My brother Richard, which is one of the central characters in the book, had a imaginary friend named Griffin. And he looked like a griffin, eagle-looking body. And in the original story, I actually see Griffin and play with him and talk to him. But in reality, that didn't really happen. And every time when I would read the book or I would have reader comments, I would always feel guilty that I wrote something in the book that didn't quite happen. And even though I mentioned that it's a true story, but that was something that didn't quite happen the way that it went. So I went ahead and changed it to be more like how it really happened. And how it really happened is my brother Richard had the imaginary friend, and he would tell me stories about about Griffin, and that's how I wrote the book as the second edition, that I don't actually see Griffin, but it's the stories that my brother tells me instead of me actually going through those adventures with Griffin.
Okay. Did you change any names at all? Or did you eliminate anything? I know that there was some controversy with people in the neighborhood and also with some family members, and I just wondered if, because of some of the feedback you got from them, if you went ahead and made some changes because of that feedback.
I did change one name.
Mm-hmm.
It was a neighbor, because I had my house, and then you had the empty lot next door, and then you had the house on the other side of the empty lot. I did change her name. And she did mention to me when I went to Austin this past September to visit that she didn't really like the idea of having her name in there. And the new owners that now own the house that I live in also didn't quite like the idea of me having the actual name of the street in the book. And so did the empty lot. The empty lot now is no longer empty. They actually built a house there about 4 years ago. And the new owners there really was not happy with the book at all. They both got together and really tried to convince me to change the name of the change the street name. But after really thinking about it and talking to other members, other people who live on the street, I decided not to change it.
Not to.
So, right, not to change it. So it's still I still list the name of the street, which is Ben Howell Drive in South Austin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not illegal. I'm not really hurting anybody. It's a very central part of the book, mm-hmm. just like how I changed Griffin to make it more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really want to change the name of the street, because then I would just be going against saying that it was real.
Right. So did you change the cover at all? Or are you leaving the cover as is?
I'm leaving it as showing the handprint,
mm-hmm.
but I did add the gold sticker for the 2010 Theaters Tours.
Good. So the reason I ask is my assistant, I'm not sure where she found it, maybe through your Facebook or something, that you were taking votes for a new cover. And she called me over to the computer. When I looked at it, it's like, oh, my goodness. The girl was, you had an image of this girl in color crawling out of this hole. And and I know I've told you this story before, but the listening audience may not know this. After I had read this book, and a friend of mine read the book as well, we decided to make a trip to the street. She brought her two kids with her, and I brought my husband and my granddaughter. She had just arrived from Canada, and so we were going to go and just walk the street, and of course all the street is one block. And the interesting part was that we parked at one end, walked to the other end, and as we were walking back and closer to the vehicle we were at, and sort of in front of the where the empty lot was and where you used to live, we turned around and we saw behind us a figure of a girl. And we all just looked at each other, and it was like spooky, because of course the story is spooky, and here's this tall blonde. We couldn't see the face because it was dark, even though there was a street light, but the long hair and the light clothing. And so we all just looked at each other, didn't say a word, and we started walking faster and got into the vehicle, and it's like, oh! But what was interesting, Art, is when Susan, my assistant, showed me the picture of the cover that you were taking votes on, it's like I looked at her and I said, oh, my goodness. That's exactly what we saw, although we didn't see the face, but the clothing and the long blonde hair. So it was like, oh. And then when we got in the vehicle and left and we went for ice cream after, we had to kind of like all settle down. It's like, was this a real person or was this candlestick?
Yeah, that is very interesting, because I have had a lot of reader comments from people from the neighborhood,
uh-huh.
from the South Austin Ben Howell neighborhood, that has emailed me and given me their accounts of possibly running into Candleface or running into other ghosts similar to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I do mention in the book that Candleface didn't just visit me. She must have visited other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the central themes, too. It's like, why me? And is there others? So I started thinking, it wasn't just me. She was actually going out to other people. And I would say at least a dozen people in the neighborhood has mentioned that they've had their own run-ins with Candleface. I don't know if it's true, but it is quite interesting. And I did mention that I wanted to write a sequel, or at least a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have to wait until I get out of the Army, but just won't have an opportunity to be in Austin for several more years. But I would like to go and visit these individuals that say that they had their own run-ins with Candleface, and research it even further and find out who she was before she died.
So tell me,
what kind of person was she?
Art, these people that have experienced, and are telling you about their experiences, is this people that were experiencing this at the same time as you were when you lived there, or is it people that are living there now and she's making the visit now?
Most of it is people who have experienced it at the same time as me.
Uh-huh.
There is one individual person that said that they experienced it several years later,
mm-hmm.
but the individual that has told me about that and has asked me not to really discuss it. They're still going through the issues of that particular, going through that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if I'm the one that actually stopped Candleface, because since everybody has seen her at the same time as me, maybe I'm the one that stopped the whole thing, except maybe. For the individual that is saying that he's seeing her now.
But
or
we,
it could be.
What did we see? You know, did we see a person that was actually just walking down the street and actually lives there, or was a Candleface that appeared to us?
I don't know. That is really, really interesting. I would hope just to say it's just a little girl.
I don't know. I don't know.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. And today I'm talking with author Arthur M. Mills, Jr., and he's the author of The Empty Lot Next Door. And it's a book that is based on true events of a haunting in Austin, Texas. And so far, I'm sure you found this interview quite interesting. So, okay, did Candleface really exist? Is she still around that infamous street in Austin? Don't go away, because we're going to continue talking with Art. In your book, you talk about, and your central character is Richard, your brother. Now, we know that he committed suicide. Now, looking back, you know, in your adult life, as you look back, as to see what really caused the suicide. What was he going through that took him to a place where he actually committed suicide? That, you know, life had to end for him here.
I would have to say he was just part of the wrong family. I mean, we had such a dysfunctional family, and he was so smart, very intelligent. He really liked to read and write, and I wouldn't pick up a book for nothing, not even in school. Neither did my brothers or my parents, but he really enjoyed studying and writing, mostly romantic-style poetry, and this is for a 10 to a 12-year-old kid that really enjoyed to do that. And no one paid any attention to him doing that. I would read his poetry, and I would say, oh, yeah, this is really good, but inside I'm thinking, silly. But I think he just had these interests that no one else had. And we wanted to play football and soccer while he wanted to sit on his bed and write poetry. And he did have two older brothers that were really into drugs and really saw my brother Richard as the punching bag of the family. They put out a lot of their frustrations on him. And my brother was very stout. He would not fight back. He would say, Jesus will protect me. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. And the bullies, including my brothers, would say, okay, and then hit him on the other cheek. And it got to the point where my brother just could not stand it anymore. And unlike this child that's in Australia that's big right now on YouTube, where he actually fought his tormentor, my brother just wouldn't do it, would not even lift his hands to block the blows. He would just accept it. And I think he got to the point where he just could not accept it anymore. And there were so many warning signs that we can see his poems turn from a very beautiful romantic poem to very dark and people talking about how the world's going to be destroyed because of pollution. Now, we're talking about in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this type of writing was not very common. But he turned from his extrovert self to an introvert, and one day he just snapped and decided to end his life.
You mentioned, Art, that you came from a dysfunctional family, and so as your brother Richard was going through these torments, this bullying, was there any discussion of bullying within your home? Were your parents aware what was going on with this child?
We didn't have any discussions with bullying, and that's one of the things that haunt me today. I would say the candle face thing is gone. You know, it doesn't really haunt me anymore, but it's the lack of family communication that still haunts me. It's, why did I not tell my mother about what was going on with Richard? Why couldn't I tell my teachers? And years later, it was just actually around September when I was in Austin, I met with one of my elementary school teachers, Ms. Haddock.
Uh-huh.
She was my third grade teacher, and we talked, and she was telling me about the students at Molly Dawson Elementary School at the time. And she was telling me that a lot of the students were actually abused at home.
Yeah.
And the only time that they were safe was when they're at school. And several of the students even had to take showers in school. And the only time when they got to eat was in school. And the teachers had to spend so much of their own money on the students because they were being abused or at least neglected at home. And this is something that I was completely unaware of.
Wow.
So it wasn't just my brother that was being, you know, picked on. It was so many other children, and I was completely unaware of it. But nowadays, I think bullying and suicide awareness is much more part of the curriculum in schools. I know it is in the Army. I've been stationed in Korea for several years now, and we have one of the highest suicide rates in the Army. I mean, we have several, unfortunately, within my own unit every year.
Wow.
And so it's very unfortunate. And one thing that I've learned about my brother is I actually try to go to the elementary schools here in Korea. Mm-hmm. I've talked to elementary schools there when I was in Austin. I talked to the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts here in Korea to discuss bullying and suicide, and of course the book and about the writing process.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there needs to be more emphasis on bullying, and not just emphasis on the ones being bullied, but the bullies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go after them and try to explain to them what they are doing, and the ramifications of their bullying is going to have on these kids and themselves.
All right, when you go into the schools and talk to the kids about bullying, do they ask questions or, you know, is there a dialogue that goes on between you and the kids?
Well, unfortunately, when I do go to the kids are more interested in the ghost story aspect
of course.
Of the book. Yeah, they want to know about Candle Face and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really the adults, the parents that are there too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always trying to push the conversation back to the bullying aspect. So that is very interesting, you know, how that works out, how the different the interests within the group.
Uh-huh.
So the parents will tend to ask more questions about the family life. Who was Richard?
Yeah.
And, you know, my relationship with him. Well, the kids want to know about Griffin and Candleface.
Of course, because that's who they can relate to. And, of course, a ghost, you know, that's just so much more exciting than talking about bullying
right. That
they want to probably just sort of avoid. And,
right.
You know, from what I understand, here in the U.S., anyway, there are a number of schools and more are getting into this, that there's actually zero tolerance in bullying. And if there's any bullying that goes on, kids are kicked out of school. But what I'm understanding now, of course, with the internet age, you know, there's cyberbullying, and that is really getting out of hand. So, and then, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, have things really changed? You're talking about coming from a dysfunctional family where basically your parents were emotionally absent. They may have been there in presence, but, you know, whenever they were there, but emotionally they were totally absent. And I'm just really wondering if things have really changed in our society over the years. You know, why are these kids now resorting to cyberbullying?
I think things have changed to the better. However, but because of the internet, there's just new ways to bully.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the bullying, like we see on YouTube video, that Australian boy getting hit by a much smaller guy, I think a lot of that has died down. I think now, because there's texting now, there's the internet, there's so many other ways that you can bully from your own house.
Right.
I think that will increase. And you know the old saying that words hurt just as much, you know, as physical pain. So in that sense, bullying is worse. Now, one thing I do want to mention, too, is, and this hasn't really nothing to do with bullying, but many years ago, I had another soldier of mine, actually, who was my supervisor, that was going through a really nasty divorce, and he mentioned that he just wanted to kill himself. And I had flashbacks about my own brother, and at the time, saying, if I ever hear somebody say anything about suicide, I'm going to do something about it. And I did go, and I told our boss, this guy just said that he wanted to kill himself. And they had a search party going to look for him. And they found him. And the Army got him some help, and he even flew in his father to stay with him for a few months. But he eventually got out of the Army. And when he, during his ceremony, he mentioned that I actually saved his life.
Wow.
That he was on his way to kill himself.
Wow.
But because I spoke up and prevented it. So that, you know, that made me feel like $1 million.
I bet.
And when I was in Austin last year, I also went to visit him in Tampa, Florida. And, you know, we had a good long discussion about, you know, what he was off to do and how I ended up preventing it.
Wow.
So communication does help.
Exactly, exactly. And so, Art, as a father, you know, looking back at your own childhood, emotionally absent parents, bullying that goes on, you know, that went on at that time, not only what you witnessed, your brother Richard, but also the bullying that went on by your two older brothers. And, I mean, you lived in this whole turmoil, dysfunctional type of situation. And now, as a father of two children, what are your parenting skills like? What, you know, how do you parent?
Well, both of my kids were not born with the manual like many other kids were.
Yeah.
So I had to just wing it. I had to just do it completely on my own. My wife is Korean, born and raised here in Korea, so we have our parenting skills are completely different. We're from different cultures. But my son, Arthur, the older one, several years ago, we were living out in northern New York. He had a bully, and this guy would always pick on him. And I tried to do the thing about telling my son to walk home, ignore him. I went to the school, talked to the teachers, and this kid kept on bullying him. And we even set up an appointment so I could actually talk to this child's parents.
Mm-hmm.
But that appointment never happened, but the bullying continued. And so finally I told my son, and I know a lot of psychologists, a lot of people is going to disagree with what I'm just about to say, but I told my son, put up your hands, defend yourself, even if that means that you have to fight back. Because after all, in the book, I fight back my bully, Candleface, and my brothers ended up defending my brother Richard. So I said, well, let's just give this a try. And my son Arthur actually fights the bully back, and then a few weeks later they become friends, and the bullying stopped. And I see that several times, and I'm not saying that, you know, you have to go out and defend yourself physically,
right,
you know, like at the very first moment, but there has to be a time to fight. You know, there's a time to love, there's a time to hate, time to fight, and just have to use your better judgment when that time is right. I know that's very controversial in schools today, where they say don't fight at all. You just got to tell. But sometimes you're just going to have to. And that's what I tell my kids, that you're just going to have to at a certain point. But I do have my younger son, Alan, which tends to be more of an introvert. He doesn't get bullied or anything, but I see my brother Richard and him quite a bit. In fact, my brother, his real name is Ricky Allen Mills, and I named my son Alan after his middle name. And he's very similar to my brother Ricky or Richard in the book. And I always have to watch him and monitor him. My son does seem to be a little bit more introverted and more concerned about, you know, his own feelings, and he keeps it in. So I do have to monitor, you know. So if I see my children feeling sad or so, I tend to be more permissive or passive, because I don't want them to feel that way, because I'm thinking, what are they going to do now? You know, they're feeling bad, or they're going to go to their rooms and hurt themselves.
So, it's not easy. It's just not easy.
No, it definitely isn't.
When you've gone through what you did and the experiences and really no support from your family, it's hard. So, all right, you're in Korea. Now, as you know, you're pretty close to Japan there and all the stuff that's happening with the earthquake and the tsunami. How is that affecting you
right.
in Korea?
It really hasn't affected us yet. I know that there's the winds blowing radioactive material, but it's blowing it away from us. Here in this part of the world, the wind mostly comes from the west and blowing it to the east. So it's actually blown away from us, but Korea doesn't have earthquakes, not like that. I mean, every once in a while, maybe once a year or so, you'll feel something and wonder, is that an earthquake? And then you'll see in the Korean news that it was such a minor earthquake. But we are internet. We are rationing a lot of the internet time. I don't understand it at all, but we are rationing the internet time to save the bandwidth for emergency relief there in Japan. But that's about it. That's really all I see here.
Well, gosh, Art, this has been a pleasure talking to you again. And I love this book. And of course, read it, and as I mentioned earlier, I went down the street and experienced it and then had an opportunity to actually meet you when you were here in Austin in September. And when I got the list of these award winners, it's like, oh, Susan, who is my assistant, she read the book also, and we just like, yes!
Right.
So again, congratulations on the wins, congratulations on your book, and I'm really,
Thank you.
It's great that you took that opportunity and revised it and did the second edition, made some changes, and I just know that your next book is something we're all looking forward to. It's like, okay, now what? So I hope you do write that next book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one thing I didn't mention too is one of the major changes to the book is I did add 17 new sketches for a total of 49.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, it's really an illustrated book. A lot of people don't understand that or realize that until they open it up and realize that every 8 pages or so there's a really good sketch describing the book. So, and that's one of the major comments too, is people love the sketches. So I asked the artist to come up with some more, even more illustrated now.
Yeah, I've got the book on my desk here, and I'm just kind of flipping through it, and it kind of brings you more into the story when you see it. I'm looking at the one here on page 210. This is of your old book, and where Candle faces, I don't know, she looks like she's holding or jabbing something into you, and you're on your back, and it's like, you know, and as reading the story and looking at the illustration, it gets you more into the actual effect of the book and the experience that you had. So it's great, and
right. Yeah.
I know that teens love it, but also adults do, too.
Right, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Art, for talking to us again and talking about your book. And, again, congratulations on your wins, and I look forward to that next installment.
Well, I'm looking forward, too, just so I could have another interview with you. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, too. And there you go, listeners. Do check it out, The Empty Lot Next Door. It's based on true events and the haunting of Austin, Texas. And as you know, we've been talking to Arthur M. Mills, Jr., and he is the author of this book. Do check it out. It's a great book. I've read it. I've experienced candle face, maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't say it's not. But it's a great book and thoroughly enjoyable, not only for the adults, but definitely for teens as well, too. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening.